Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
IGN Playlist is a new home to your game library. Rate games, share lists, and log your game time powered by How Long to Beat. Sign up for early access today at playlist.ign.com.
Beyond, and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show covering all the latest and greatest in the world of PlayStation, with a couple of my favorite busy bees in the gaming industry. I'm joined this week by Jada Griffin.
Hey, doing my Earthbound bee, you know, outfit, gotta represent Ness, you know,
love it. Everyone's favorite PlayStation character, as we all know.
Exactly. You know, Earthbound's always been a PlayStation exclusive. It needs to come back to PS5.
That's what you've been saying this whole time. One day it'll happen.
This is the single determining factor that got me hired at IGN.
Exactly. It's don't question it in the comments. Anyway, we're also joined this week by Matt Kim.
Yes, I'm filling in for Mark Medina, and those are some big shoes to fill.
Don't worry about filling shoes. You're here because we want
popular.
You here.
He's so popular, and I have to be as popular as he is.
He's popular, but he also doesn't know what a sequel is. And you know what? He's not here. And you are.
I could do that. I could not know what a sequel is. What's a sequel? I've never even seen one.
Oh, no.
Toy Story 2. Is that a sequel?
No, it's a prequel.
Definitely not. Yeah, it's definitely a prequel.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Every sequel needs to also be a prequel. Otherwise, what's the point? For anyone who's wondering why we're bees, you can check out on the video version. We all happen to be matching this week. But we do actually have a decent bit of PlayStation news, some that dropped this morning as we're recording, that we're going to get into, including the possible revival, continued unconfirmed story of a longtime PlayStation franchise. The sad news about how difficult it's going to be to get PS5s, unfortunately, for this year, and the maybe unexpected turn that PlayStation is taking to help alleviate that, and some other things. But before we get in, I did just briefly want to show off. PlayStation sent these along. I did a mad dash to my mailroom this morning to get them. The new DualSense colors for the PS5 are out. Obviously, this is just for the video version, so I won't spend too much time. But we have the new colors. If anyone can quickly search for me what the exact names are. They've all got like virtual like space names, and I forgot to write those down. But we've got the pink controller, the new pink DualSense, the new blue DualSense. I'm going to try to hold all of these at once, and the new purple DualSense. I'm trying not to all block them in one view. These are the three new DualSense colors that are available in addition to the red and the black, and then of course the standard white. I don't know about you all, but I was not like super excited for more DualSense colors, and then I've seen these in person, and I kind of love them.
They look really good.
Yeah, they got announced like right after I had gotten the Cosmic Red, so yes. I was like, oh, cool, great. Maybe I guess I gotta buy another controller because I really want these colors now.
Okay, I got your names for you.
I'm gonna take a guess at them first.
Oh, I like this.
Because I have no idea what they are. The baby blue is Shine Sprite blue, because Shine Sprite's were nefariously blue.
Of course. Another classic PlayStation game.
Yes, classic PlayStation game. We've got the, the Atreus's hair pink, because it wasn't pink either, so it's terribly wrong. And we've got the Midnight Purple. I don't know. I'm going with the easy one. I'm going to see if I nailed the purple one.
Matt, how'd she do?
You were close on purple. It was Galactic Purple.
Ah, so close.
Starlight Blue and Nova Pink. They're all space themed.
Mm. I think the Midnight, though, is the name of the Black controller.
Oh, you're right. That's
what
it is. The faceplates,
which I have not unboxed because it's a lot of packaging and I didn't want to have to deal with that on the show. We'll be posting photos on IGN and showing them off on social as well, so you can go check them out there. But yeah, I weirdly was not a DualSense or a DualShock 4 collector last gen, but I guess I am now for DualSenses. Until I have to bring these all to the IGN office. But
I was never a collector guy for hardware, right? Because hardware is way harder to collect than video game collector's editions. But when the Spider-Man PS4 came out last gen, like, that was the closest that I got to spending money on a second PS4. Like, that was the closest I ever got to being like, I guess this is it. I guess I have to take out a loan.
The only special edition consoles I ever get are Zelda-themed ones for my Nintendo consoles. And then I happened to win the white Destiny, the original Destiny PS4 when that dropped.
Wow.
I won that at a conference because I knew some trivia about Destiny. And so, and somebody else answered and they got it wrong. And I was like, well, that person's wrong. I know the answer. And I got it right. And they're like, cool, we're sending you a white Destiny PS4. I was like, yes.
That's
embarrassing for them. Imagine, stepping up to the plate and just whiffing it.
Oh yeah.
The shame they live with.
Oh yeah. Everybody in my crowd my group of friends was hanging out, they were like the cool kids. And they're like, yeah, we don't care about this. I was like, screw you guys. I'm going to win me a PlayStation. Like,
yeah, it's not cool to not care about winning a free console. That's the cool thing. You did the cool thing.
I did the right thing. So.
It's so easy to want to look cool and try to be cool. But really, just if you're going to get a free console, that's the coolest thing.
Right?
But anyway, we'll talk more about console availability and things like that in a little bit. But before we dig into some of the news topics, I did want to start the show, both last week and I think the end of last year in a lot of our Beyond episodes, very understandably, our focus has kind of been around the big PlayStation ones, Horizon and God of War and Gran Turismo to a lesser extent, just because of our familiarity. But those are sort of, you know, the tent poles of what 2022 is going to be for PlayStation. Three sequels to some of their biggest franchises. Really, really important and stuff we're going to be covering quite a bit. Obviously, Horizon's out next month, the second half of February. So we'll obviously be covering it a lot then. But we were planning before the show, and Matt, again, thank you for stepping in and being able to roll with the punches of having to jump in for this. We were talking about some of the games that we think maybe, you know, aren't getting as big of the spotlight because of our sort of attention and focus on that stuff. And as much as we're going to try to make sure we focus on a wide swath of games throughout the year, we sort of wanted to set the tone for PS4 and PS5 games. This is not, you know, generation exclusive, but we wanted to take a look at some of the games that maybe we're not constantly talking about in the PlayStation ecosystem just yet, but that we're also really excited for. Some of these are console exclusives, some of them are multi-platform, some of them are just games that have the year 2022 as their listed date, and we're hoping they come out this year. So that being said, of course, stuff might get delayed, some of these things might not happen, but we're sort of looking at a bit of third party and indie stuff that we're really excited for that we hope will make a mark and hopefully we'll be talking about later in the year on the show as we get to actually play them. So with that in mind, and obviously please in the comments, you know, we're just covering a small swath of games. If you're watching on YouTube or you want to write into beyond@ign.com, let us know some of the games you're looking forward to most this year, other than of course Horizon and God of War, because don't worry, we will be covering those plenty. But before we get there, let's take a look at some of the games that we're hopeful for in the year to come. Again, this is just games that have 2022 confirmed. So we're using the loosest of this year, but we'll obviously see what happens. Jada, I'm going to start with you. Which game would you like to talk about first that you're excited for?
Let's start with the one that's probably least likely to drop this year, but I'm hoping makes the
perfect
cut. And that's going to be Sonic Frontiers is going to be the one I'm going to start with. I'm a huge Sonic fan. I love Sonic Adventure 2. Battle is by far the best Sonic game they've ever made. It's also like, what are we, two, three generations back from the GameCube, or past the GameCube now when it dropped originally. And I think it also dropped on Dreamcast, if I remember correctly. I know the first one was Dreamcast. But it's been so long since we've gotten an amazing Sonic game. Sonic Generations was great. It was probably my second favorite. Sonic Mania was a great return to the traditional Sonic. But I'm looking for that next big 3D adventure Sonic game that doesn't suck. And when I say that, the one that comes in mind is probably the one that comes to everybody's mind, Sonic 06, which is, you know, going to be forever heralded as probably one of the worst 360 games, as well as one of the worst, you know, Sonic games to be made. But Sonic Frontiers looks gorgeous. It looks so good. The graphics look amazing. Granted, this is all CGI, I believe. I don't believe this is in-game stuff. But I'm excited to see what they do with this more kind of a potentially open world Sonic, or, you know, just kind of a more exploratory Sonic game. Because it's all about going fast and getting to the goal. But, you know, sometimes there's lots of shortcuts and other things that are hidden. And I think that's why I love Adventure Battle 2, because it just balanced it out so perfectly between playing as all the different characters and just the world that you could explore. Story was decent, but the gameplay is really where it was at its best. Either of you guys, Sonic Adventure 2 fans?
Oh, yeah.
It
all-timer.
I mean, it has one of the best songs in video gaming history as well.
Oh, yeah.
I was literally just mumbling the lyrics under my breath while just hearing about
it. Live and learn.
It's so good. Yeah, the Sonic Adventure 2 is one that really stuck with me. I spent untold hours in the Chao Garden and just love that game in general. But yeah, it's, I'm with you in terms of like Frontiers. I definitely have fallen off, I think, the Sonic 3D bandwagon in the ensuing years of Adventure 2. And you know, I loved Mania as well and thought that one was great. But yeah, I'm always hopeful that there's something a little more. And granted, I haven't played the last few. Like, I'm sure there are admirable parts of all of them to find. But just the general tenor has been, when are they going to kind of get back to that apex on the 3D side? And I hope it's Frontiers. You know, I feel like there were, and Matt, you can tell me if I'm totally off the mark, but I feel like there were rumors about this one all throughout last year, like about a new 3D Sonic. And I think there were expectations that it was going to happen because of the anniversary, and it didn't. So it seems like they're taking their time with this one. And Jada, like you said, it might even get delayed out of 2022. So it's like, this feels like they know they kind of need to really get it right.
Yeah. One thing I will say, like all of our live streams where we're doing big events and stuff, people were like asking, like, when's Sonic? When's the Sonic trailer? Like, I was like, I don't know when these trailers are going to play, guys. Like, they send them, they just literally stream them to us and we play them and I react with the audience, which is a lot of fun for me. But also, yeah, I don't know. I didn't know it was coming and I was excited when I got to see it, just like them. So I'm happy. I'm happy for the fans as well that this is finally being shown off. And yes, I think they're taking their time. I think it's going to be great. I think this is going to give Adventure Battle 2 a run for its money. That is my 2022 Sonic hunch.
I hope you're right. And I also hope, despite this very realistic world, they somehow find a way to put Jim Carrey into it from the movies. But we'll see what happens. But yeah, I'm hopeful for this one too. I would love a reason to jump back into a Sonic game because it has been a while since Mania was the last one that grabbed my attention. I loved the Rush games on DS as well.
Oh, those were so good.
They were really good. But yeah, these, I'm hopeful for this one. We'll see how it plays and kind of what the structure is. We really do only have this trailer to go off of, but it should be fun to see it play out. Obviously, there's a lot of hopes and expectations, so you're not alone in that, Jada. So we'll see what happens. Matt, what about you? I know you had to jump on this a little last minute, but what's a game that you're excited for this year?
Mark was just like, hey, name some games that you're excited about. I'm like, Horizon, God of War, Gran Turismo. I was like, no, name a game that doesn't have a release date. I'm like, pass, Jackie Chan. No, I think I talked on the show before that I'm really excited for Ghostwire Tokyo. I like the Tango folks. I like the Evil Within, so I'm really excited for this, obviously. So I'm not going to dwell too much on it. Another game that I listed before the show was the Callisto Protocol, the new game from the creator of Dead Space. I don't know how, like, I'm just interested in that the Dead Space guy is making another horror game, right? Like, there's all this stuff, background stuff, like, oh, it's kind of in the PUBG universe and that kind of thing, and like, that's not really the thing that I'm most excited about. It's literally just space horror game from the guy who made a really good space horror game. So that's really cool.
Yeah, that one's really funny. And I do want to touch on Ghostwire for a sec, but the Callisto Protocol is this really funny one where it's like, I don't think they've made too huge a deal. Like, it was the way they first announced it, that it was part of the PUBG universe, but it does really sound like they're like, hey, let's let the Dead Space guy just make a Dead Space game, but we'll put it in our universe because that'll give us franchise, you know, things to do.
You know, right.
Did you, tell me if I'm wrong, I'm misremembering, did you do an interview
yes.
with Glenn Schofield about it last year?
Yeah, I did. I did an interview with Glenn. He basically just said over and over again that he's about to make the scariest effing game ever. And you know what? That's bold. That's a bold thing to say. Mm-hmm. And if that's your goal, then, you know, go for it. So I'm really excited. I'm really looking forward to it. It looks gnarly. And I hope it comes out this year because, again, who knows?
But it's... Yeah. Go ahead, Jada.
I was gonna say, yeah, this, I mean, just the trailer we've gotten is pretty gruesome, so, and grotesque. So I think he's going in the right direction. The team is going in the right direction. I'm excited to be scared. Yeah.
My hope is that they avoid the sort of like, is it Armageddon and Deep Impact, I think, were like the two movies that came out, and we don't sort of get the Callisto Protocol and the Dead Space remake kind of out at the same time. Like, I hope there's some space in between them. But to have those two on the horizon, like, as a huge original Dead Space fan, is just so exciting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I wonder if they're going to use the Bart sound again for this one. Because the big thing in Dead Space 2 was that one of the sound effects was literally the screech from the local San Francisco public transit because it makes a nightmare noise. And if you ever take the BART in San Francisco, I can never not hear it anymore, right? Like, there's that tunnel down, and there's that loud screeching, and I'm like, I'm in the Dead Space.
Yeah, going from San Francisco to the East Bay, like going into Oakland or Berkeley, if you're ever in the area, is probably a nightmare the first time if you're not expecting it. It is probably
terrifying.
And especially for me, because when I moved out to San Francisco, I lived in Berkeley at first and didn't know that was going to be a thing. So at like 6:30 in the morning, half asleep, listening to like some indie band play some like light pop rock music, and then to have that noise in the background was just the most disturbing thing. Like, that was just so discomforting. So yeah, I hope they find a way to put it back in, because it is, you can't reproduce it. It's just perfect on its own. You were also mentioning Ghostwire Tokyo as well, and I don't want to brush past it too much, because obviously this is the sort of second of the two Bethesda timed exclusives that we're still getting, even though Bethesda is now owned by Xbox. And as you mentioned, it's from the devs that did The Evil Within. Did you play The Evil Within 2? Because I never got to it and feel like I've missed out.
Yes. Evil Within 2 is also great. It's one of those things where it's, I thought it was less scary, but it played better than The Evil Within 1.
100%.
But I really, and like, they're fun. They're like, they did a lot of like homages, I thought, right? Because like a lot of their boss fights were like inspired by, like, there was like a really long haired one that looked like it was straight out of The Grudge, right? And there was a big like two faced thing that looked like a Fatal Frame demon. And so I don't know, like, it's cool. And I think the exorcism gameplay so far that we've seen of Ghostwire is super new and like not seen anything like that before, and I'm just really curious as to this whole thing. Like, you know, there was the, like, I'm curious what direction, like, how it, I mean, we don't really know too much about it, like, other than like it really put like the developer Nakamura on the scene.
And, oh yeah, yeah.
And then she left the game, so who knows what that means for the project. But I'm hopeful for at least something new. I don't know. I can't speak for the quality of it. Like,
totally.
I don't know if it's going to be the best game of 2022 when it comes out. But at the very least, it looks novel and it looks like something that I have not played. So.
No, yeah, that feels totally on the money in terms of, like, you know, I do think there were some, at least when I played the first Evil Within, there were, like, some things that definitely could have been improved, and so I do want to get to the sequel at some point, but it's, like, it was definitely trying, like, going all out And it's sort of like both homage to past horror stuff that obviously Mikami had worked on and then trying to forge some new ground. This certainly, yeah, like you said, I don't know how it's actually going to play. We still don't really know a ton about it other than the first person gameplay, but it looks like it's trying some crazy stuff. And that's fun to see that they put the money behind it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one as well. And obviously, since it's a PlayStation console exclusive, excuse me, we'll be covering it on the show. To keep it in the realm of vaguely spooky stuff, I am also going to mention a little bit of a different, I guess, take on horror, but excuse me, Oxenfree 2 is one that I'm really looking forward to. I love the Night School Studio team and what they do. If you didn't play Oxenfree 1, it is frequently on sale for like $2, so go play it. They're side-scrolling, like walking and talking, sort of adventure games, sort of classic throwback in that way, with a lot of really the big thing that they sort of capitalized on was the emergent dialogue and the conversations and really having this sort of naturalistic feel to everything. So the characters, you hope, kind of talk like they are in the first game. They were teens, so you're hoping they talk like actually realistic teens, and the conversations they're having feel fun and realistic and silly, but also intriguing. And it, as you get to learn about these characters, and it's a new cast for the sequel, and there's also this big sort of addition that we've seen. I got to see a hands-off preview of it, and the one of the big additions is essentially tears in the universe that you get a radio frequency to go to, and then you get to go to a different time period for a part of the world that you're in. And so that'll help you solve puzzles, be able to get, you know, further, maybe get some new details about the story, things like that. Night School, for me, it's all about the writing and the story from them. So like, as long as the script delivers, I'm not expecting, you know, this isn't like a crazy puzzle platformer where it's going to like test your timing to some ridiculous degree, though there is a little bit more movement involved in this one. But they're just such great writers. And if they can nail that with the sequel, I'm really hopeful for this one. Mm-hmm. They also now have Netflix money behind them. So who knows
that's
what that'll mean for the
future.
That's
a lot of money.
Yeah, it's not affecting the release of this game in any way. But yeah, they got acquired by Netflix last year. And so whatever they do next, you know, probably going to have some fun backing, may even get an adaptation. Who knows? But yeah, I can't wait for Oxenfree 2. I love their stuff.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Moving on from there, just to also mention another one, I'm going to mention this quickly because it's a little bit bigger and I feel like almost a cheat saying it because it literally combines two of the most popular things in the world. But I am just so stupidly excited for Lego Star Wars. I don't know about either of you, but I am just like a huge collectathon person. Like that's just the things I grew up on. And Lego games are such a great distillation of that sort of experience. But Lego Star Wars, the Skywalker Saga feels like they're actually evolving their formula, which has roughly been kind of the same for the past like decade. So to see them really focus on like the combat's a little more intensive and like the cameras behind the back, it's a bit more open world in terms of like where you're choosing to go at any given time. You're traveling between worlds. It's covering the entire 9 movie Skywalker Saga. So there's a lot of material in there and it's just one that's been delayed like several times, and I assume it's because of sort of the scale and ambition that they're working at is just, you know, at a different level. But they know how to make really fun and funny games, and if it can just kind of nail that for a Star Wars game for me, I'm good with that. I just could really use that sort of like fun escapism at the moment.
I was gonna say, yeah, I love the Lego games. I don't think I've played one since like the original trilogy, which came out after the prequel trilogy of games, if I remember right.
I think so, yes, yeah.
They have such a great way with humor and making fun of what happened in the scene and just making light of it for kids and everybody, really, but just in a Lego sense. Like I don't know what part of the production, the design team is doing that, like the blocking and the rigging and stuff for the characters for that. But they do an amazing job with just like the humor. I don't know how to explain it, but like, it's got so much charm and I love it. And I want to play this. I am super excited for this one too.
They're just like crazy charming. I will say the also selfish part of this is, I love Lego. I love Star Wars. Lego Star Wars sets are stupidly expensive.
They're so expensive.
I can't justify it. It's not even like I need to save the money for my kids. I don't have kids. I'm buying them for myself. Like it's for me. It is a personal selfish expense. But it's like $400 or more for most of the big sets, and I'm like, I can't do that.
Genuinely, I'm like every now and then I'm like, I should buy I haven't bought a Lego set in a long time.
Yeah.
And I should as a treat for myself. And then I look at the price. I'm just like, no, I'm okay. Actually,
yeah.
There's an incredible, I think, Cantina one they did. Yeah. And it's like $300-something. And I was like, I could buy like 20 indie games for that amount. So I might just pass for now, as cool as it is. But yeah, this is basically, you know, $60 or $70 and I get the entire saga. So I'll take it.
You used to be able to buy a little canister of Bionicles for like $20.
Back in my day.
Mm-hmm. Back in my day.
A Bionicle? Used to buy
$20 could get you a full Bionicle, and that will last you for months, years even.
Loved Bionicles. I cannot understate how much Bionicles were my stuff going on.
Did y'all see Bionicles?
Did y'all see that documentary, The Toys That Make Us?
I haven't watched it yet.
So there's one on Legos, right? And Lego, the company, has been like near bankrupt like 3 times in its full history. And each time something saved it. And one of the things that saved Lego from bankruptcy, I think the second time, was Bionicles.
Yep.
Where like they were just like, we got no money. We don't know what to do. Like, kids aren't buying Legos anymore. And then one crazy genius was like, I have an idea. I have a crazy idea for a thing. And then, and then Bionicles just shot them back up into money zone.
It blew up. They had TV shows and the games. They had everything for Bionicle. It was crazy.
They were so bad. It was like an action figure that you built and then got to play with. So it was like this added layer to it. And honestly, even like you, Matt, mentioning buying a Bionicle, it's like they were in canisters, right? Yeah, like we're in, they were cool. in specialty. Yep. It was like a collector thing.
Yeah, it was so cool.
Anyway, welcome to the Bionicle podcast. We're just going to talk about that
Legos, for the next hour. Legos, send us all your Bionicles.
They must be in the warehouse.
Yeah, I don't think they make them anymore. Yeah,
I don't think so.
Kids don't know what they're lost out on.
I know. These days, they get their buyout, their Legos in NFTs. It's crazy. Anyway, Jada, tell me another game you're excited for.
Let's go with one I talked a little bit about previously. Plague Tale Requiem. Let's go with that one. I super loved Plague Tale Innocence way more than I expected to playing it last year on my trophy sprint. And it was just such a good story. The gameplay was so polished. The characters were well done. I really enjoyed the world that I was in, as weird as that sounds for how disease ridden and destroyed and plagued with rats that the world was. I really enjoyed the world that the Asobo team created, and I'm so excited to dive back into it and see how the formula has evolved, how the world has changed, because I won't spoil anything, but there's a huge thing with the rats, obviously, that's bigger than just them being everywhere. And so I'm excited to see how that kind of turns around. Based on the trailer, it sounds like the primary focus in the first one was very much you're this older sister trying to take care of your little brother. And the second one, it seems like, you know, she's kind of more on her own, but and she's got her own stuff that she's dealing with for herself. Her little brother obviously is still going to be there, but I feel like they're going to put more focus on the main character, which I cannot remember her name right now, which it really bugs me. But I really adored her character. I thought the voice work and just everything was great about A Plague Tale Innocence. Highly recommend playing it. It was free on PS Plus a couple months back. I think it was still the PS4 version was free in the store when I just looked at the PS store the other day. So you have no reason to not go and try this game. It's amazing. It's probably about 10 to 12 hours to play through it. Definitely worth a quick playthrough for a stealth action adventure game.
Yeah, I really need to get to this one. I downloaded it for PlayStation Plus and just haven't gotten to it. But everything I hear, especially post-launch, because it definitely kind of, I think, got buried when it debuted originally. But ever since then, anytime I hear someone being like, oh, I finally tried A Plague Tale Innocence, it's great. Why aren't people talking more about this? And there's a lot of people are like, it fits the PlayStation cinematic mold so well, too. I really need to get to it.
Honestly, playing the first one, it felt like a very mini Last of Us kind of style. So, if you're a Last of Us fan, there's a good chance you'll probably like this. It's got the crafting on the go. It's got the stealth. It's got the, you can just go at people with a sling in your rock if you really want to. I did that to farm resources off of people because they dropped materials. So I was this, 12-year-old girl just taking out armed soldiers because I could. Do it. Play it.
You do what you can to survive. I'm excited for that one, even if I haven't played the first game yet. But yeah, that's definitely on my to-do in this, very quiet year of games that we're looking forward to. Matt, what's another one for you that you're interested in?
I got on my list, the third on my list is Little Devil Inside, the little indie game that they keep showing off in the PlayStation showcases, which it looks charming. It looks good. But really, the main reason for me to be interested in this is from a South Korean developer, which is something that I've been noticing actually a lot in these mini, not AAA PlayStation present kind of things. But then they've been showing a lot of smaller games from not just America and Japan and Europe, right? They've got Southeast Asian developers and South Korean developers that they're showing off now. And so Little Devil Inside is one of them. And so I'm just curious what a non free to play shooter from Korea looks like.
That's a good point.
Yeah. But no, I totally get what you mean. I do feel like it's been a really solid thing of sort of the Nintendo Direct, or at least the indie world showcases, tend to make a big deal of it as well. And I'm glad that is becoming a bigger thing because it is just the reality of the world we're living in. I think most people do think of it as it's developed in North America, maybe England and a little bit outside England, and then Japan. But it's there are so many developers across the world that are able to bring these really unique and really interesting both perspectives and just designs and artistic levels to it. And so to see stuff like this get the spotlights that it has is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really curious. I've heard, I have friends in the Korean indie scene who I talk to sometimes, and they've been, you know, saying that like, oh, the scene is up and up, right? Like there's a whole bunch of new indie developers down there. They're not just working for, you know, the next like big free to play hit, right? So I'm really curious about this one, and I hope it comes out this year. I feel like this is one of the more safer bets if I had to say what is going to get delayed and what isn't going to get delayed, but who knows?
Yeah, we didn't get a release date at the last State of Play, but it felt like a pretty sizable chunk of the game. So, yeah. You know, obviously vertical slices get made for showcases all the time, but hopefully there was more to the game than just what they showed off. And you know, we've known about it since the, I think, first PlayStation showcase for the PS5 in 2020. Yeah. So, yeah, this one could be really exciting. I'm hopeful for it. As well. Speaking on the indie side of things, I am really looking forward to, and apologies to the developers if I am butchering it at all, I don't know if the T is at all pronounced, but Chia. This was another indie game. I think it got showcased at that same PlayStation State of Play as well as Little Devil Inside last year, and it was also at the Game Awards a little bit. And I'll be honest, at the State of Play, I didn't really pay it too much attention at the time, just because I think, you know, we were reacting to it live and going through everything. And then I watched the trailer at the Game Awards, and sort of like in a 4-hour show where a lot of stuff can bleed together, it really stood out to me. I think because of the both just the art style, it's like a very beautiful, vibrant look to it. It's very much to me sort of like in a Wind Waker sense of this gorgeous, beautiful, colorful open world to a certain extent. But it has all these different little gameplay elements to it that we saw in the trailer. And if you're watching the gameplay on here as well, you can see it of even small things. Like what I thought was amusing was the little like guitar mini game that's in there, but it is all about exploring this natural, beautiful landscape. You essentially can inhabit animals around the world and traverse that way. And so you can fly around, you can be a crab, as you're seeing in the video version, you can be a turtle, you can be all these different animals and explore the world in different ways. And it feels like a beautiful mix of like a low stakes, I guess, Wind Waker or Breath of the Wild with some like magical, fantastical realism to it in a really beautiful way. It just seems like fun and joyful in a way that I'm really enamored by. I'm really curious to see what it plays like, you know, over a few hours, but it looks really cool. I definitely recommend going to check out the full trailers for it if you haven't seen more of it. But yeah, it's one I'm now very, very excited for.
Jonathan, two things.
Yes.
A, I believe that's a ukulele, and I believe it's fully playable if I remember correctly.
I'll just leave now.
Right. Two, are you okay? Like you said, this is what I need about these like cute, charming, just like playable like escape from reality games for both Lego Star Wars and Chia now. So like I just want to do this like I am the community lead. I need to make sure that my staff community is okay. Are you okay? Do I need to send you muffins or
I won't say no to that. Yeah, I mean send me delicious sweets. That sounds wonderful. I'm doing okay. I think, you know, after 2 years inside and experiencing the same couple blocks around my house, very vibrant, vibrant, beautiful open worlds that I can go explore speak very highly to me right now in a way that they don't. Like I'm good with more of a blend, I think, throughout my life. But I think it's also why, you know, Horizon is also one that I really loved Horizon Zero Dawn, but I find myself just day by day more excited. And I think because it's just this beautiful, big, very, very well detailed open world. And I just like the idea of that because I haven't been able to do much of that. But otherwise, totally. I'm doing okay, I think.
Good. Good to hear.
I don't know.
Game
I don't
has
really
a glider. I want to play it. And that's basically it.
100% agree. Yeah. Yes.
Great game's got gliders. A glider.
2022, yeah. You're the glider. I'm in for
you're
it.
The glider.
One of the first games that did that was Wind Waker with the leaf. Wasn't that one of the first gliders? I'm sure there was probably something in a smaller game, but
it's
that
one
was
of
probably
the most memorable.
Most,
yeah.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the... It's very possible there was even a Zelda I'm forgetting before that. But yeah, for me, Wind Waker is the one where that was the first time that felt like a big mechanic in a game.
Yeah.
Jada, I know you have one more game that you want to mention, so why don't you hit that one for us?
Yeah, let's this is Solstice is my next big one. This one, I forget which, I think this was shown at our Summer of Gaming last year. And I just really got captivated by this dual character control style where you're controlling both this like human character and this like ghost girl. And it looks very Demon Souls, Dark Souls meets Devil May Cry. And that is my jam. I love Devil May Cry games. I love that fast paced action of combos and juggling enemies and just, you know, perfect dodging at the last minute and countering. I love all of that stuff. And so this game is looking to fill that void that I need. I played Devil May Cry 5 back when it came out and it was great. But there really hasn't been anything that has caught my attention, at least. If there's something out there that I have missed that's Devil May Cry-esque, that's not Bayonetta, because I've played those to a degree. I haven't finished them. I need to get back into those, but other stuff. Anyways, if there's other recommendations you have that I've missed, chat or community, please let me know. Listeners, that's the word I was looking for. But Solstice looks great. It looks so gorgeous. I think it's going to be one of those smaller kind of releases. I think it's going to get overshadowed by all the other bigger things coming out this year, but that's why I wanted to spotlight it here, because I think it looks phenomenal. And I can't wait for all that blood. As you're seeing, if you're watching the video, there's so much blood when you slice through people.
Jada, are you okay? I think it's fair for me to ask in return.
So much blood.
Totally fair based on me playing Last of Us, Plague Tale, looking forward to this one. I just started Days Gone. I might actually need help. So you can actually...
I'll send you the muffins.
Send me some
cookies
and muffins, please. Yeah. And if, you know, people in our listeners and chat on YouTube can just send me a nice, happy comment, that would help even more.
Be nice on the internet. That's our takeaway.
Be nice on the internet. Yes.
From today. That's my challenge for 2022.
A little aside, Jada, when you were summarizing game, I would totally watch a show called Human Character and Ghost Girl.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
right, like coming to TBS this fall, Human Character and Ghost Girl.
who would play the human character, though?
I don't know, a human, hopefully.
Ah, damn, you caught me.
Yeah,
my vote is Steve Buscemi.
He is a human, I believe.
Unconfirmed at this point in time.
At this point.
Yeah, TBD.
At this point.
We'll check in on the investigation of Steve Buscemi's... Oh no, if there's bad news about Steve Buscemi in between the show going live and us recording it, it's going to be awful.
Steve Buscemi, come to Beyond. Talk about PlayStation.
Steve.
Yes, please. Talk to us about your favorite, mafia-themed games.
There are rumors you might not be human. We got to debunk them on PlayStation Beyond.
Please come on this show. We're addressing the important PlayStation topics the world cares about. But no, those are just a few of the games that we're looking forward to in 2022. I think the goal of this was very much to say, like, we cannot wait for the massive games that we're all going to be talking about. But there's so much else coming out this year that we also, I think, want to make sure we're doing a good job of keeping up with and highlighting when they're being released or, you know, doing dev interviews and things like that. So we'll continue to check in, I think, on these games and plenty others throughout 2022. Other than, of course, anything that unfortunately gets delayed. But if that happens, there's still a ton of other great stuff to play in the coming months. And we're looking forward to a lot of that. But before we get there, I do have a few news stories to get to. And a couple actually broke this morning that I wanted to prioritize, because I feel like one of them in particular might be a good thing for those out there to know if they haven't heard about this. Obviously, at the end of last year, it's been no secret for the last year plus, and on the show we've talked about it, of just how hard it is for people to get PS5s, whether it's due to scalpers or just due to limited supply and the increased demand. It has just been really, really hard to get PlayStation 5s and Xbox Series X's and S's. The consoles in general have just been really hard for people to get. PlayStation, in fact, I believe, revised down their expectations of how many PS5s they expect to sell in the next year, not because of a lack of interest, but because of the supply chain and limitations on getting chips and things of that nature. And so apparently to help offset that within the next year. Though PlayStation never had said they were going to stop producing PS4s publicly, Bloomberg had a report that said Sony has told its assembly partners that it is planning to continue producing PS4s throughout 2022, despite allegedly having plans to discontinue assembly at the end of last year. And this is essentially to help, quote, fill the supply vacuum and keep gamers within the PlayStation ecosystem. So essentially, PlayStation knows you're having trouble finding a PS5 and hopes maybe buying a PS4 Pro in the meantime will help offset things for you. Matt, I wanted to start with you just with your thoughts on this, because we were talking a little bit before the show also about just like trade-in value of consoles. This is a really interesting point right now.
Oh, Sony really just says, we have a PS5 at home. PS5 at home. It's a PS4. I told Jonathan this when I stepped in real quick. We were messaging about the show, and he was telling me that we wanted to touch on the story. And I was like, I had a really recent experience where I finally offloaded some old consoles, including a PS4 Pro. And when I was trading them in, my local GameStop retailer person told me, like, oh, it's a good time to trade in right now, because like trade-in value for like PS4s and older consoles are like really high right now because of this situation where people can't buy PS5s and Series X's. And so PS4s and older Xbox Ones are still like hot items. And so these are like in demand right now. And so like the value for that I got for my PS4 Pro was like $250, almost like $300 if I got store credit, but I didn't want store credit. but yeah, so a little advice. If you have an older console and you also happen to have lucked into a next gen console, consider trading them in, because people want them right now. It's a big little hi, my name's Wario64, and I've got a deal for you.
His identity has been unmasked.
It was Wario's me. it's nuts, right? It's nuts that that this is the situation we're in, and I genuinely, like, I think it's one of those weird things that I have to, like, think about, is that, like, when I lucked, essentially now, like, I say this, like, when I lucked into a PS5 at launch, like, I kind of was like, yeah, I was like one of the lucky few who got it like early, but I'm sure people will catch up with me in like 3-4 months or whatever. But like, no, mm-hmm. we're well into 2022, and this is still an issue, and that's kind of wild.
And it's go ahead, Jim.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for reference in the news story, they had mentioned apparently part of the reason for this and the decision behind it was because, quote, the older consoles use less advanced chips, they're simpler to make and provide a budget-friendly alternative to the PS5. Mm-hmm. And it's just really wild to me on, like, the two levels of one. Obviously, if they're thinking they can sell all these PS4 Pros, you know, I assume mostly PS4 Pros, that... even though that is one of the best-selling consoles of all time, they still assume there are a lot of people they can get to who haven't bought them yet, which is a really interesting thing for the next year. But two, it's, you know, I think we all balked a little bit when Sony said, you know, we believe in generations, we're going to move forward into the PS5, and then announced all their first-party games were cross-gen. It's probably something they're really happy they announced at this point and are willing to eat a little crow about, because now no one... especially when it's just so hard to get, no one is going to be locked out of God of War or Horizon. Yes, they won't have the prettiest, best running version, but presumably it will run decently well on a PS4 Pro, enough so that people can have that in the meantime. They're probably happy that worked out, but I'm sure they're not happy it has to be the reason, but it's interesting that it lucked out in this way to me.
I just hope that the developers, especially Sony and all of, as a publisher and all the studios under them, that they're offering offering the free next gen upgrades. They're going to offer not next gen, but current gen upgrades. They're offering those PS5 upgrades to the PS4 versions of things like God of War and Horizon, because they know it's so hard for fans and the audience to get these systems. Like, and it's not their fault that they can't find one. It's literally just the world and chip shortages, you know, so hopefully that they're going to do the right thing and, you know, either some type of a timed thing, or like if you buy the game, like you know, brand new, like if you buy a physical, for our physical buyers out there, that it comes with like a code inside the case so you can digitally upgrade one day. And maybe it's like if you buy the game within the first month of launch, you get that or something like that.
I think, and I'll double check if I'm wrong, but when there was the big kerfuffle over Horizon not having the cross-gen upgrade, I think when they backed away from that and were like, okay, you'll get both, don't worry. I think they said going forward, any cross-gen will have it as well. But I'll double check what like their exact wording was. But I'm totally with you. It's, as you said, it's no one's fault other than the crazy world that we live in right now, and also horrible scalpers who want to upsell these things. That's really the only like bad people in the moment, but it's not the fault of like the people trying to make the systems or the players who want them. And so no one on those sides of it should be punished for not being able to get the system. And so hopefully, you know, we'll obviously be testing them out on IGN, but it's like hopefully the PS4 versions of those big games still run well enough that it is not really an issue for people. But I don't know about either of you. It does make me think they probably wanted a much quicker transition, but we're going to be in this weird sort of cross-gen era for a lot longer than I think they or us anticipated. I don't know if you all thought it would last a while, but...
They're like... Again, it's not just game companies that are fighting for these parts, right? It's like car manufacturers, TV manufacturers, refrigerator manufacturers. You know, they're all using like phone manufacturers, another big one, laptops, computers. That list goes on forever, right? Like Sony is not just competing with Microsoft and Nintendo for these chips, right? They're competing with Samsung. They're competing with Apple. They're competing with you know, Toshiba. Is there even, do they make Toshibas anymore? I don't even know. But
I think they're somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Right? But yeah, so this is not just a game industry problem. This is like a worldwide problem. Like you mentioned it. Well, we do IGN, Destin does the graphic comparisons for us. Destin and Mark and that team does the graphics for us. And I love those because I like Digital Foundry. I love the work that they do. So I'm really excited to see the PS4 versus PS5 comparison videos for stuff like Horizon and God of War. Not because I want to see, like, not because I'm looking forward to seeing how, like, better one does than the other, but I like seeing how close they can get one to the other, if that makes sense. Like, I want to see how close they can get the PS4 version to the PS5 version, because that's the goal for those developers.
Yeah. Nobody likes a blowout. Everybody wants, everybody wants a close race, mm-hmm. You know? We want it to be close.
So here is the original thing, and I do wonder if this might change. Probably not, unless we all make a big stink about it. But so for Horizon, because it wasn't properly messaged, at the time, Jim Ryan had said Horizon will be getting a PS4 to PS5 upgrade at no extra cost, because there wasn't really an upgrade path at that moment. But he announced that moving forward, all first-party PlayStation exclusives that are cross-gen will offer a $10 upgrade path. Regardless of whether or not you purchase the game digitally or physically on PS4.
That's like bare minimum. So like that's, I mean, I guess that's good. I mean, because you'd be spending the $10 extra if you were buying the PS5 version anyways. So it's nothing extra technically in the grand scheme of things. Okay, but that makes sense. Yeah.
It's not the best case, especially when you see what other companies are doing, but it'll probably depend on, you know, where we go from here and how long this era exists. Because I'm sure they were looking at, I think for, you know, Spider-Man 2 and Wolverine, those were both announced as PS5 only. Are they going to figure out a PS4 version now for Spider-Man to make sure people can buy the most popular superhero game of all time? I don't know. It's a weird state. And obviously that would add a ton more work. So I don't, you know, I'm not even saying that's logistically feasible at this point in the development immediately, but who knows where things are going to stand a year from now. It's kind of wild to be in this place. Yeah. But obviously when and if we hear more, we'll let you know. But as a heads up, we've been saying it on the show, it will probably continue to be hard to get PS5s for a while. And seemingly PlayStation knows that and hopes you'll buy a PS4 Pro in the meantime. Moving on from there, I did also just want to mention this came up today. There's sort of been like a back and forth of this happening. None of it has been confirmed by PlayStation, but, you know, in addition to a Twisted Metal series for TV being announced, there have been rumors and reports that a Twisted Metal reboot has been in the works. Originally, the rumors allegedly said it was being made by Lucid Games, the team that made Destruction All-Stars that came out last year. But just this morning before we were recording, VGC said in a follow-up story that the Twisted Metal reboot is allegedly now at a PlayStation first-party studio, that studio being Firesprite, the dev they recently picked up who's making Horizon Call of the Mountain with Guerrilla and has made The Persistence before. They're another UK-based studio. I think VGC said amusingly they're like minutes away from Lucid geographically. Like they're very close to each other. but in terms of sort of a little bit more public data that was found to back this up, but again, not confirmed, a Reset Era user found that Matt Southern, who has credits on the MotorStorm and Drive Club games, announced that he's leaving Lucid for Firesprite and seemingly in a similar role. So theoretically, we don't know if he was ever working on the Twisted Metal reboot. Again, we don't even know the Twisted Metal reboot is like confirmed by Sony, but VGC has been pretty credible with their reporting on things of this nature. And so now it seems like Twisted Metal is coming back, but it's internally at Sony, but still with the person who was making it when it was externally from Sony. It's a weird case, but good news for Twisted Metal, I think.
So based on Firesprite, do either of you want Twisted Metal in VR? Because they did Persistence, which was VR. They're doing Call of the Horizon, which is VR. Do we want Twisted Metal VR?
Oh.
You guys hadn't even thought about that.
Well, I didn't.
I mean, I did. And the answer is no, because I'm susceptible to motion sickness. Commenters will let me know, because I did a preview for Resident Evil 4 VR, and I did the baby mode, the not motion sick mode, right? The teleport mode. And I got so many comments that they were like, we got this VR newbie. And I'm like, I'm not new to VR. I just get motion sick. sue me. Yeah. You know, like
they will.
They will. Yep. They really will. Like Cloverfield made me motion sick, and that's a theater. And I saw that in theater. So, you know, that's just my stomach.
I honestly think I would be okay with getting a Twisted Metal VR, just because I think it would be kind of a cool, more immersion into the world of Twisted Metal. Again, I love dark, edgy worlds. Apparently,
From my end,
even in the Ghost Girl.
Yes.
First, most importantly, Matt, yeah, toward the end of Cloverfield, when they're at the very heights of that skyscraper and they kind of look over to the side, totally almost had a vomit moment there as well. So I get what you're saying. Secondarily, Jada, on the PlayStation topic, I think it will be in there. I wouldn't be shocked, but I don't think the game will be VR only, if that makes sense. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if there is a VR, like, arcade mode that they put into it or something like that. Like they're a huge studio, Firesprite. They very clearly have a lot of experience with VR and were acquired at least in part for their VR experience. So it wouldn't shock me. And it would probably be pretty fun to be behind the driver's seat, in that world. I'm trying to think of like Wipeout VR worked very well. And those cars move crazy fast. Like they are ridiculously fast cars. So I could see them doing it with Twisted Metal in like an arcade arena sort of thing. But my guess is the like main modes of the game would still be sort of third person vehicle combat sort of thing.
That's my guess too. But I would love to see a VR version of Twisted Metal. I've been playing Twisted Metal since the original back in the PS1 days, and getting to just see it first, getting to yell at Sweet Tooth for throwing his special at you and seeing it in first person. That would be pretty terrifying.
I got a question for you guys.
Is
my read on this for between the Twisted Metal report and the confirmed, because Firesprite is also making Horizon Call of the Mountain.
Yes.
Does it feel like Sony is really bringing Firesprite into the fold like really quickly? You know, like because when they were announced as an acquisition, people were kind of like, oh, yeah, they're that like VR studio. Right. But like Sony seems to be really like fast tracking them into all their like core franchises.
Jada, you go ahead first.
Yeah, I think that I think Sony has recognized that there is probably some really good talent there. And I think with the acquisition, they're trying to make the most of their dollars spent on the studio. So they're trying to bump it up in its notoriety so that people know it like they know a Naughty Dog, like they know an Insomniac or Sony. I think they want to establish Firesprite as this new maybe not as big as a Naughty Dog or Insomniac, but this like, hey, we have this amazing other studio, Fire Sprite, and they make great games too. I think that's what they're going for. And I think we'll probably see the same thing for like Bluepoint with that after that acquisition, since they did Demon's Souls, whatever next gets announced for Bluepoint, I imagine we'll see some more fast tracking for that too.
I totally agree with Jada. And just to build on that, I think, Matt, to your point, they are such a huge studio. Like, they are hundreds of people big. So they're now immediately just one of the biggest PlayStation studios, just by like a headcount sort of thing. But I think the thing with them is that studio was founded sort of out of the leadership that came from Studio Liverpool, which was previously a PlayStation studio. So I almost feel like it's a homecoming moment that, and this is me totally speculating, but that like current PlayStation leadership is like, we can build this studio to essentially be Liverpool 2.0 and to be within PlayStation, that sort of presence. And so I think immediately handing them the reins to one of their biggest current franchises and one of their biggest oldest franchises, if that all is proving out, is a like, hey, we loved working with these guys back then. You know, obviously I don't know the personal connections Herman Holst has to any of the leadership there, but presumably there's some familiarity just on a person mm-hmm. level. And so I wouldn't be shocked if it's like a, we know what these teams can be capable of. Let's hit the ground running with them. And I'm sure even if these two projects are the projects that they're, you know, that we know about so far, they probably have more going on as well. So I totally think they are aiming to make, I almost called them Liverpool. I think they're trying to make Fire Sprite as big, but I think to show that PlayStation Studios can do more than third person action as well. I do think that is a stigma that PlayStation has gotten, and it's not like those games have been bad. Obviously, I love God of War and The Last of Us and Ghost and so much else, but that's sort of the PlayStation formula that gets levied at them a lot. So I think these acquisitions can let them say, we're so much more than that. We're not just those games and Gran Turismo. Look what else we can do. And Fire Sprite feels mm-hmm. like primed to do that. Sorry, that was a bit of a ramble, but yeah.
No, that's good. Yeah.
No, it makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, I totally think we're going to like, I can't wait to see what all of the new studios that PlayStation has acquired have going on currently. Like you said, Jada, like whatever Bluepoint is working on, I'm in from minute one. But I do feel like Fire Sprite is the name they are going to push to be like, you're going to know this name. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a name that PlayStation fans hopefully revere and love in the same way as they do the other studios.
Yeah, definitely feels that way.
But yeah, I do think there was probably more time and space to talk about Twisted Metal in the future, especially our hopes for what a reboot could be like and things like that. But did want to quickly move along. There's a bunch of other news has happened in the past week, and I'm just going to kind of brush over it for now. But obviously, for those who didn't hear, it is worth mentioning. One, I forgot to mention at the top of the show, but allegedly Horizon Forbidden West, a large chunk of the game has potentially leaked, or like someone has a leaked version of the game. So just be careful online of spoilers. You know, we're a little more than a month out, so just be careful if you're going in fresh for that game. Mute some words on Twitter. Maybe be careful when you're hopping onto Reddit, but just be warned about that. And then also, of course, if you didn't hear, E3 is not happening in person this year. And its sort of digital future is unclear at the moment. We'll see what happens there. It's not like PlayStation has been at the last few ones. And I think there's a lot to talk about PlayStation sort of focus on events. But in the meantime, go check out Rebecca Valentine did a really great piece sort of about the state of things with E3. So go check that out on IGN. You can read more there. And obviously when we hear more, we'll let you know. But I just hope PlayStation brings back PSX at this point. It's my hope.
Same here. I loved PSX.
Especially I never got when
it was
to
go.
It was only
PSX, yeah.
It was only here in San Francisco for 1 year, I believe, and I got to go to it. And that was the year they revealed Final Fantasy VII Remake, I believe.
Oh, nice!
And it was just so amazing. Like I think I literally was in tears seeing Final Fantasy VII Remake at PSX in person. Like it was so good. I could be wrong. It could have been something else that brought me to tears. I love games, and I'm not afraid to share that. But PSX
on a,
was
on
great.
A gaming podcast. How what? Dare you?
I know. That's so on. Terrible. No, I loved PSX. I thought it was great. It was, you know, basically, if you remember when Sony was at E3 and they had their big kind of showcase of stuff, it was basically that, but it was just all them. And it was so cool just to be able to go like, I want to try everything that Sony's VR, PSVR is doing. And they had literally had almost every game that was being shown. There was like 12 different games they were showing off for PSVR alone. And that's something you wouldn't do. You wouldn't necessarily see from Sony at an E3, even back in the day. You'd see maybe 10 to 12 games total, I would say, if my count is right. It's been like, what was the last year Sony was there? 2014, 2015?
At E3? 2018?
Were they at 18?
Yeah, they were at 18, because really? That's that was when we got hands-on with Spider-Man for the first time.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, so it's still been a couple of years, and I don't think I went to 2018, or if I did, I don't remember it. E3 is a busy time for us, especially when you're there covering 10, 15 games, individually.
A day.
Which is what I was doing. Yeah, a day. But yeah, no, it's something you wouldn't normally get from Sony. You'd get like a lot of stuff, but you wouldn't get such a huge focus on one specific area. And with PSX, you got everything, which is great. I loved PSX. Please bring back PSX, Sony, please.
Went to one PSX, and I don't know if this was something that they brought to other events, but the year I was there, they were showing off Shadow of the Colossus Remake, and they brought in a giant, like, story and a half Colossus that you would climb up on with, and it had it's actually really messed up in hindsight. But it has a giant Colossus like thing that model that you can like climb into and then take a photo with. It was like a photo op like thing. And what you're supposed to do is it has a sword stuck in the top of its head. So it captures the moment that you plunge a sword into the Colossus's head, which is very cool as a photo op, but if you play the game, it's actually really sad. And so And so I took a photo of me like crying while holding the sword in his head. Don't make me do this. And so that was traumatizing, and I never want to go back to a PSX.
Yeah, I never got to go. I really would love to someday. And Jada, to your point of like, it's a small, because it's just focused on PlayStation, it can be both a smaller scale but still feel like a big event because they have so much to be able to show with third parties. So yeah, my hope is that they do an event like that someday when it's all safe for us to go and be in an event space like that together. But for now, we'll find out what happens for the rest of the year. Probably some state of plays, but we'll touch on that stuff later this year. From there, I just did want to jump briefly into what we've been playing. Jade, I'll start with you. What's been preoccupying you these days?
I am 33 hours into my new Demon's Souls run. I just picked it up like I think last week. Yeah, I know, I'm a monster.
So you've fought one boss, I'm assuming. And
I have all but one Archstone left to collect to finish right now. I finished 5 of the 6 Archstones. So I'm just about wrapping it up, doing any like shifting my world into pure black tendency or pure white tendency to do all the optional stuff before I kill all my NPCs and then start my new game plus and do it all over again. Like I said, I think last episode, I'm playing a mage, and mages are so broken when it comes to the bosses. There's so many bosses where I just literally stood on the edge and just cast spells.
Yeah,
and they just die instantly. And I've never played a mage class in Demon's Souls before. Like, I usually go very much spear and shield dexterity builds with a bow. And I don't know if I'll ever bake anything other than a mage, because mages are just so OP these games. And I love it. I love it. So, but yeah, that The World Ends With You. I'm about 6 days into the first week. I started Days Gone last night. I'm about 3 or 4 hours into it. I am really enjoying the gameplay. I don't care for the character so far, but like I said, I'm very early into it, so don't at me in the comments yet. I will share this journey.
It's over a long game. It's like 60 hours.
Yes.
So
yeah, yeah. And I'm playing on Survival 2 first playthrough blind. Have no idea what I'm getting into. No HUD, no fast travel, 2 hits or 3 hits and I die. Yes, go ahead, Jonathan.
I guess Jada, are you okay? I just need to know.
I am more than okay. It honestly doesn't feel that bad on Survival 2. Like, okay. I was really expecting it to be Last of Us 2 grounded permadeath-esque stuff. And I was just like, oh, I don't have a HUD. That's just like anytime I play Call of Duty hardcore lobbies, whatever. that doesn't bug me. Fair enough. Honestly not that big a deal. So, but we'll see as I get further along and, you know, I get sideswiped while riding my bike and, you know, insta-killed. But, you know, that's what...
I'm excited for you to deal with some of the bigger hordes, especially on that difficulty level. And I'm curious to hear your experience then. I only ever got about 20 hours in. Of course, forgive me if I'm assuming, but I would guess we're a little bit late to it. So that's why we didn't cover it on the show this week. But the whole Days Gone sales question, Days Gone has been in the news a lot recently due to assertions that it sold roughly the same as Ghost of Tsushima. Some follow-up interviews. This was from a former game director on the game. I would recommend, rather than like mincing words, I'm just going to say, go check out all of the news coverage that we have on IGN about it. You can get sort of a breakdown, a list of events to go through. We're a few days late to it, so I didn't want to make it too much of the focus. But did it, just being in the conversation, make you want to jump into it? Is that...
It did, because, you know, I knew it was a story that popped up this week and as a chance that we'd talk about it in passing on the show. I was like, let me boot this up. Let me try it and see how it feels, how it plays. I really like some of the mechanics. I like the upgrade system. Whoever was in charge of naming the different upgrades, I really liked those because they had 6 feet over instead of 6 feet under for like when you take a bunch of damage and you get like regeneration or something. Nice. I was like, that's just brilliant. That's super smart in all of their level or skill upgrades or have those names. But yeah, no, it's great. I think it's good so far. I'll have more to say after I have more than 3 to 5 hours in it. So
fair enough. I'm very excited for you to get the platinum trophy. I don't know if you looked at it, but you should, if you do, let me know if anything pops up to you in its description.
Yeah, I have not actually. This, I usually look at all the trophies. Also, okay. Forget those little newts that pop out of the trunk. I jumped so hard at the first one that jumped at me last night. I freaked out. I literally, like, I visually jumped back on
That's
my fair. Couch.
Ooh,
yeah, it was. I usually look at the trophies before I start a game. So I know if there's like special things, and I forgot to do that with Days Gone. So I have no idea what the trophies are. I went into it really blind.
Fair enough. Well, yeah, just, I would say go check out the description of the platinum trophy when you can.
Okay.
Matt, what about you on your end? You're also playing The World Ends With You at the moment?
I'm also playing The World Ends With You. Nice. Really, really bummed that I started that over the holiday break. I was looking for something to play while we were all off, and I'm like, I have this game that I haven't touched, even though I own, so I plugged it in, and I'm digging it. I'm just, like, really surprised by how well they captured the feeling of the original DS version of it with the new one. Like, the vibe is the same, you know, the gameplay has been modernized, but like the characters like are of this. It feels like I'm jumping back into something that I really love, which it does. So I'm really excited to keep going with that one.
Yeah. I'm bummed to hear it didn't sell as well as Square Enix expected, though. I always feel like I hear that about Square Enix games. They never sell as well as expected.
It's true.
Yeah, that I played it when it first came out for a bit and need to go back to it, but I'm totally with you. It captures the DS game really well, and just, man, that world and that style and that vibe, it's like, it's so great. It's definitely smaller scale, but it's such a fun game.
Yeah,
it's so much fun. The only thing that does kind of mess with me is the view of like the buildings. So you're running down the street and they're like straight, and then as you get further away or closer, they like curve over you. And it's so just weird. It just messes with me, but I love it. I'm playing through the whole game at level one, because you can reduce your level.
Yeah.
And so every time I level up, I reduce my level back to level one, and because it boosts your drop rate. So like when I chain five enemies, I have like a what am I at like now? 175% drop rate for pins. So like I'm sitting on day six with like probably 200K. in money.
Oh my god.
Like, because you just get so many pens, and I just go and sell all the extras, and like my people are always full of food. I have all the clothes purchased. Like, I love World Ends With You. It's day six. I have everything that's available. Everything that's available, I have
the incredulity in Matt's voice. I think I mispronounced it both times. Just the way the reaction to that was
I'm on day four or five. I've got like 2,000 yen to my name and like a t-shirt to share amongst my three party members.
Oh my god,
my people's fashion sense are a hodgepodge. It would not work.
The difference is stark, right? Like Jada's party is all well fed and well clothed and rich as hell, and my party is not clothed, hungry, poor,
shivering on the streets of Shibuya. Yeah. Can you spare a pin, sir, please? Yeah, I really need to get back to the one. I really did love what I played of it. I just briefly have been playing. I went back to the Frozen Wilds because I never finished it and want to be fully prepared for Forbidden West. So I've been playing that for a little bit. Love it. Still great Horizon stuff. I actually really, really like the characters and the storytelling in this section more than even a lot of the base game stuff. I think it's been really interesting so far. The only funny thing is just going back to Horizon after not playing for a year and a half or so, in a late game save is really hard. It's really hard to get back in at that level.
Modern feature that I need in all games is just like a reminder of controllers, like controls.
Yeah.
Like something that's like, you haven't played in like 6 months. Here's how the controls work. And I just need that in every game now. Like I cannot.
Just give me, every game should have basically a X-Men danger room that you can just hop into at any point to refresh yourself. And just that would help so easily.
Yeah.
I mean, Horizon technically could do it with their holograms and stuff. It'd be so easy. It'd be in canon.
It works. But yeah, I've really been loving that. I've been playing through Uncharted 2 as well because my girlfriend hasn't played the series before and I wanted to catch up for 4 and Lost Legacy. So we're playing through 2 right now. And she will not let me go buy a single treasure. It's wonderful. She's hunting for all of them, and I adore it, because that's what I did.
That's awesome.
When I played. So we're doing that, and then, yeah, just continuing my Persona 5 Royal playthrough. But I think that's pretty much it on my end. We're unfortunately short on time and over our time for recording at the moment, so we do have to wrap up there. Jada, let's hold on. We're going to hold on a trophy tip for next week, but if anyone has trophy tips they want to send in, if there's a particular trophy you're proud of and want to tell that story, write into beyond@ign.com with the subject line trophy tips, and we'll try to read some of those on the show. Additionally, if you have any just general gaming stories you want to send in of your PlayStation life, send them in to beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card, and we'll read those on the show. Before we wrap up, Jade, I'll start with you. Anything to plug, anything to remind people of as the new year starts off?
There's gonna be a blog post coming up in a couple weeks, but nothing nailed down for a date yet, so just keep your eyes out.
Awesome. And Matt, anything on your end that you want to point people toward?
Yeah, during this podcast I wrote a script and sold a TV show to Fox called Human and the Ghost Girl, so check that out for fall. Yes. 2022.
Oh, interesting.
I got a special thanks at least, right?
Yeah, we'll talk afterwards.
Oh no. Did you get Buscemi?
You know what, talks are happening. It's close. Ooh. It's probably likely. I think
look forward to the story and deadline. But yeah, other than that, I'll just say, if you have enjoyed the Art of the Level series that we've been doing, more on the way this year on the feature side, look forward to one later this month that will be coming out that I'm working on right now, and should be a really fun one. But other than that, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Jada and Matt, thank you so much for joining me for this wonderful episode. Really, really appreciate you both stepping in. And of course, Matt, for jumping in so last minute. It was wonderful to have you. Thank you both, as always, for joining me. Thank you to Kate for making the show happen and producing behind the scenes. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching. We hope you're doing well, and we hope you're staying safe. And as always, beyond.
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 Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical, New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.